Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program heard weekdays on 18 radio stations with 27 signals all across the Treasure State. Thanks for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook at Voices of Montana and on the internet at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Contact me at tom at voicesofmontana.com.
You know, I joke a little bit on the program that there's nothing that I wouldn't do or nothing that I wouldn't try. I think you learn a lot, you get out there, you stretch yourself. But that always ends with, except for bull riding, and there ain't enough tequila in the world. But apparently there is for some out there as well, because it is one of those sports that has just, it's grabbed our attention. And I think there's a lot of us here who don't get it. What are you doing on that animal? Well, there is a person here in studio, and she has made a career out of this. It's a very unique story right here from good old Big Sky Country, Johnny Jonkowski. Today, we're going to tell her story with the help of Montana PBS. They're working on a documentary today. They have for a while. It's called Johnny. We got that today on Voices of Montana. In studio is Johnny Jonkowski. Let's say hello. Good morning.
Good morning, you guys. Great to be here.
Yeah, thank you for
especially being here. Especially after the big PBR weekend last weekend.
It was like a ton of fun.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and there were some announcements there, too, about a new line for you. And we'll talk about who Johnny Jonkowski is here, too. Maybe not everybody knows, but she's a Cowgirl Hall of Fame. She is a former bull riding champion. Johnny.
And absolutely.
Yeah. And you got to go back and tell the story because it was years ago when there weren't many of you riding bulls.
Not very many of us riding bulls, you know. And that's not really what I grew up wanting to do either.
You were a racer. Yeah,
you know, I was a track athlete. I mean, I was a little girl that absolutely loved horses and loved riding, but I was a long way from a cowgirl. We lived in the middle of Billings, you know. And when we moved to Billings, I became really good friends with my neighbor and her dad, who lived in Baker, and Conrad all that way. And anyway, she was going to go there that summer, and I had the option of going with my family to Minnesota to go fishing or go to the farm in Baker. And 9-year-old Johnny went to Baker.
Nice.
And spent the summer there, you know, learning how to ride and do whatever. And at the end of the summer, they gave me a horse to take home. I fell in love with it, and that's where it started.
You know, there's a lot to catch up on here as well. And there's two stories we're talking about today. The one is of Johnny Jonkowski, and then the one is those folks who are telling the story of Johnny Jonkowski, because this has been going on I guess you said like 17 months. It goes back to November and let's welcome our other guests here today, and thank you guys for joining us. They're joining us by phone here. They are the co-producers of this upcoming program on PBS. It's called Johnny. J-O-N-N-I-E. And first, we'll say hello to Sabrina Lee, the director of the program. Good morning, Sabrina. How you doing?
I'm great, Tom. Thanks for having me. And Johnny, it's great to hear your voice.
Again. You should be tired of it
it's
by
been
now.
A week.
And then Scott Sterling, a well-known director of documentaries. He's director of productions for Montana PBS and a co-producer. Good morning, Scott. How you doing, sir?
Good morning, Tom. Thanks so much for having us. And I agree. It's good to hear your voice, Johnny. I haven't seen you in a little while.
Now tell me, how much is a little while then? Like 3 days, 4 days?
Last weekend.
You guys spend a lot of time together, though, don't you?
Yeah, we have. You know, in bunches. It goes in little bunches. You know, we'll spend days together, and then we won't see each other for a while, and then we'll spend another grouping together. And yeah.
Let's start with that, just because we're there. Scott, what's it like making a movie, you and Sabrina? I mean, you go back. I suppose the idea just like evolves and keeps changing depending on what kind of content you have.
It does. That's one thing I really love about documentary is that a couple of things. One, you really get to become an expert about all this cool stuff that you don't know. You know, I have some history of working in live television for rodeo, but you know, to get to know this sport, get to know all these different subjects that we get to work on these films is really fun. And the fact that it does evolve, you know, you walk into one of these stories thinking, okay, here's what it's about. And then by the end, it might be completely different and hopefully better. But, you know, you make so many discoveries along the way and you really get to know people. And I think that's just really, you know, we kind of get a backstage pass to really cool stuff. And, you know, our goal is to really tell Montana stories. You know, we're not out for, you know, we're nonprofit, so we're not out to make money. We're not out for ratings. We're really out to tell the stories of people like Johnny that otherwise probably wouldn't be told.
Yeah, and there's so much when you start looking into people's lives and the impactful moments, so to speak. There's a lot to draw out there. Sabrina, I'm going to get a comment from you as well. And then, I mean, going back to November of 22, when you ran into Johnny or sought Johnny out, not necessarily to make a documentary about Johnny, but that's what kind of presented itself, huh?
Yeah, precisely. So I was really interested in making a film about women in rodeo in Montana. And I had a conversation with the Western photographer, Barbara Van Cleve, and she said, you can't make a film about women in rodeo in Montana without speaking to Johnny Jankowski. So I gave her a call thinking it was just going to be, you know, part of the pre-production research that one does. And after an hour and a half of one of the most fascinating conversations I've ever had with anybody, I said, this woman warrants her own film. And, you know, to speak to what Scott was saying about getting a backstage pass and also getting to, once you engage in making the documentary, you get to witness as things unfold. We thought we were making a film that, you know, largely about Johnny's fantastic past, you know, her thrilling rise to the top of this career, this profession that's rather male dominated. Over the course of making the film, a lot of present day things happened. You know, a terrible flood ripped through Billings and destroyed her property. We got to capture her rescuing a horse from a kill pen in Texas and restoring him to health. So all of these present day stories running parallel to what happened in the past have really created what I like, just the perfect circumstances for a film with a really strong narrative arc. So, I mean, Scott, I don't know, I think you agree. We feel like this, you know, Johnny's story is so, it feels like such a Montana story, but it's also just from a filmmaking standpoint, a dream come true, because we have great archival footage, but we also have this present day action that's really compelling.
Johnny, I'm going to, because you and I were chatting just before that, you know, you grabbed a lot of attention, or there was a lot of attention that was directed toward
right.
you, but you weren't the only woman in rodeo at the time that was riding bulls, so to speak.
Was an association. There's been girls riding bulls since, I think, probably the 1800s, you know.
Probably,
and,
yeah.
I mean, seriously, I'm sure there has. As long as there was a cowboy wanting to get on them, I'm sure there was a gal that wanted to get on one, too.
Yeah.
And, you know, my heroes that I learned about when I was working at a dude ranch for Don Wright, who actually started the Bucking Horse Sales before they went to Mile City. I started there when I was 14. He used to have pictures all over of Montana cowboys, the Lindermans, you know, and obviously he bragged about Margie and Alice Greeno and, you know, how incredible they were, and they would ride anything, and they always dressed like ladies, and they made their own clothes, and their hair was perfect, you know, I mean, And I was competitive even at 14, so just listening to him brag about these girls, I obviously wanted to keep up. But that's kind of, it got filed away in the back of my brain because I really didn't have the opportunity to ride rodeo then, and I really didn't want to, you know. But then, you know, so obviously they were riding in the 30s, 40s, 50s all over the world. And then my association, I started, it was the Girls Rodeo Association, probably had 25 rodeos a year all across the country. Later in my career, it changed to the PWRA and just got a little bit bigger. So there was enough to make a circuit. There was probably 15 or 20 of us, and then we'd pick up a few locals wherever we went, you know. It takes competition to win one, you know, and you got to have those girls out there doing it. And there were some darn good girls out there.
But you were looking past it. Well, I don't know if you were. The women, so to speak, you wanted to take on the boys.
You know, I not necessarily wanted to take on the boys, but I wanted to ride as well as the guys did.
Yeah.
And the only way I could do that was to get out there and ride with the guys. Mm-hmm. And the girls were riding two-handed then. Didn't really appeal to me. most all of them had broken noses and really bad shaving scars from, you can only imagine riding two hands. You blow your feet up over your head. The next jump, the bull comes up, you go down. So, you know, it didn't look pretty. You know, they don't ever see the bull when they ride. They see the sky or the rafters because they're looking back so hard trying to pull themselves down.
Oh, yeah.
And fortunately, I was, you know, with cowboys that wouldn't let me ride two hands, so I never, ever did. And, you know, and like I said, there was girls that were darn good two-handed riders, and later, probably 4 or 5 years after I was riding one-handed, you know, almost everybody started riding one-handed then and just realized, you know, that extra arm for balance is a lot better. So, yeah, and it just kept growing.
You know, there's so many aspects, it sounds like, to the life and making a movie, making a documentary to try and tell the story that you can't search, you can't tell them all, I suppose. I'm going to go to Scott Sterling again, a co-producer of the program, Johnny. We'll have to find out when it comes out as well, and I know there's a Kickstart campaign for some final things here we'll get to as well. But, Scott, this story doesn't start out in an arena. It starts out on a track.
Yeah, it does, and that's one of the things that is so cool about this film is, like, you know, Sabrina comes up and says, hey, I've got this woman bull rider, and you know, and it really turns out to not be about bull riding. That's what Johnny did and is famous for, but you know, this starts out on a track. Johnny's first love was track and field, and that kind of morphed, I don't think probably by her choice,
no,
into something else. And you know, this is one of the things that blew me away about this film when Sabrina came to us with it in the first place, was like, here's this track athlete working to make the Olympics, gets hurt, can't do that anymore. So what did most people do? Okay, I'm going to go work, you know, whatever. She goes, I'm going to go ride bulls instead. And ends up being a two-time world champion. And the point of all that is that, you know, this film is really about that grit, that determination, that Montana spirit, that Montana attitude of I'm just going to be the best me that I can be. You know, we did a film called Mavericks recently about freestyle skiing with that exact same kind of, you know, these skiers had further to go than their resort-based counterparts, that sort of thing. So, you know, that was kind of what really attracted to me to this story. And then you add the modern day adversity and some of those things that are, you know, the current story and what Johnny's doing with Angel Horses. And, you know, it morphed from this, okay, we're going to do a film about a bull rider, to that's just kind of the vehicle to tell this incredible human being's story.
And we got all that to talk about here, what you're doing with Angel Horses and things like that. And we'll retell that story because after that track incident, or there was 2 years of recovery on that. So I want to go back to that. But Sabrina, what did you find that was secret or hidden in this story that you couldn't wait to find a way to tell appropriately?
Gosh, Tom, that's
I know, right?
One of the best questions anyone has ever asked me.
In studio, Tom Schultz back alongside Scott Sterling is with us. He's co-producer of this movie as he works for Montana PBS, director of productions there. It's called Johnny, and also Sabrina Lee, the director of the program or the show, and co-producer for this documentary. And she's an independent filmmaker. So thank you guys all for being here. Appreciate that. Sabrina, I threw a question your way about finding the hidden gem in a story. It seems like there's a ton here in Johnny's story. They're on the surface. Was there some hidden gems you had to get a little digging for?
Yeah. As a callback to what Scott was talking about, on the surface, the film is about a bull rider, but the best films are transcendent, right? It's there's like an understory. And if you look at Johnny as a competitive athlete and a human being, I was trying to figure out what the connection was between her passion as a bull rider and her passion that she's exercising for Angel Horses, her nonprofit. I finally had this epiphany that really both are about making an impact, and this human need to make an impact, to have people know that we were there to make the world a better place. And Johnny is a person who that needs to be true for her. And I think when I made the connection between those two things, it felt like that was really thematically at the core of the film. And also, I just want to add that what makes things interesting in fiction, nonfiction, documentaries, feature films, is when the character has some sort of evolution. And there's a really beautiful moment one day that we had with Johnny after we finished filming her with a group of people who had come from an assisted living facility to be with the horses and enjoy a picnic lunch. And Johnny said, you know, the bull riding, that was just about me. But what I'm doing now is so much bigger than that. And so I loved the idea and the opportunity to show that, you know, over the course of her life, she's grown and blossomed into this person who's just like, I say, you know, giving back is as necessary for her as breathing. And so I guess that was the thing for me that really hooked me and that I wanted to try to do a good job of, you know, that aspect of the story to tell that.
Johnny blushes here in studio a
bit.
Yeah, I am.
You know. I'm a little humbled by all of that, Sabrina. Thank you.
Yeah. And
oh.
talk about, well, being talked about, right?
What's that?
I said talk about being talked about all the time.
you know, it is really humbling, especially after so many years after my career, that all of a sudden, you know, all the tension's coming back and you know, in spades. You know, and I get to enjoy this second life all over again without getting run over, kicked, worried, stressed, you know, who I drew, where I was going to go, where I was going to find the next nickel to get to the next town, you know, whatever. So, yeah, this phase of my life, it's obviously this last year was brutal in so many ways. And in so many ways, it was just a gift from heaven because with the flooding and everything with Angel Horses, the community became more aware and just came out of the woodwork to help us recover and grow and thrive. So
tell us what happened.
You know, Angel Horses, this was our 25th year last year. And basically in a nutshell, what we are is comfort, compassionate therapy. We use rescued horses and dogs and we use them to assisted living comes out. Mostly 80% are probably seniors that come and visit us. And veterans, cancer patients, or caregivers, at-risk youth, we provide an afternoon of entertainment, of lunches. I learned to drive a wagon and a Surrey and a cart about 6 years ago, so I take them for rides around our 10-acre property, and we've got a nice creek and trees and whatever, all at no cost to them, because most of these people are financially, emotionally, physically, financially, spiritually depleted, and once you go into assisted living, most of them have nothing. No personal effects, no anything. So to come out to our place and get the human touch and a meal and a one-on-one of somebody's really listening to you and caring about you, you know, there's stimulus there again. And the light bulb comes back on. And we do a lot of memory care. And even that light bulb comes back on. So when we were flooded out last year, June 3rd, literally it wiped out my home completely. 100% loss of the office. The feed, the horses were standing in, you know, 8 inches of water. And then our property where we have it was completely flooded, destroyed the grade of the parking lot. So every time it rained after, our indoor arena flooded, so we couldn't do any sessions. It flipped over a barn. I mean, it was just hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of damage. And I literally thought it was over. I mean, the next day I just went, there's no recovery. There's no flood insurance. I have no way to recover. And you know, I really got down on my prayer bones and went, you know, God, am I selling out or is this over or what? And literally the next day, I mean, people were calling me up. People were pulling in my driveway with checks. You did this for my uncle. You did this for Aunt Jim. You know, I mean, it just went over on and on and on. And I was just so overwhelmed that the, you know, businesses in town started to do fundraisers. Then I really knew that I was on the right track and really did make a difference and that our organization didn't go unnoticed. And it takes a lot of volunteers to do what we do. We don't have any paid employees, you know, no one, not even our accountant is paid. God bless it, you know, because we live totally just on philanthropy.
Angel Horses, MT.org for more information if you want to help out there. So Scott and Sabrina, Scott, I'll go back to you. This is so you thought you were telling a rodeo story and you kind of hinted earlier, you knew there's always more than that. But this event, I mean, you don't thank your lucky stars for it, but, there is help, I think, or recovery in being able to tell this story, right?
Absolutely. I was in Seattle when this happened, and the phone started going crazy at like 6 in the morning. And I'm like, oh, what's going on? And I got this text from Sabrina that there was this flood happening. And, you know, it, like you said, it's a weird catch-22. You certainly don't want anything bad to happen to people. But at the same time, it's like this story is unfolding in front of us. And I called a friend of mine at KTVQ in Billings there, and I said, hey, if you guys are looking for some interesting stories to do, this, you know, we're doing this film about Johnny Jankowski. Here's the property and stuff. So, you know, there's certainly a fine line between telling a story and becoming involved in the story. But, you know, just the ability for us to help kind of get Johnny's word out a little bit was really kind of gratifying. And obviously, you know, that this is a continuation of her life story. Yeah. So we mobilized, and it was kind of back to my old, you know, local news days 20 years ago, you know, the breaking news mentality. Okay, we got to get out there. We got to get a crew out there. And Stan Parker, our producer in Billings, works on News Public Affairs. He was able to get over to Johnny's house that morning and get a lot of incredible footage of, you know, the scene that was unfolding. And yeah, it was just, it was a really, that's what I was talking about earlier, kind of having these things unfold and bring you surprises along the way.
Yeah. Again, that's the,
and I just,
go ahead, Sabrina, go ahead.
Oh, I just was going to add to that. And Johnny and I were recently recounting the story. Erica Scher, director of photography, and I showed up later in the afternoon with another very talented cinematographer, George Potter, and filmed Johnny trying to traverse this driveway, which was no longer a driveway. It was a river with how many feet of water, would you say?
It went up 16 feet, and it normally runs 8 inches.
Yeah. And so there was this.
I mean, it was loud. It was raging. It was like the Yellowstone River coming by.
Yeah. And Johnny was doing what she does every day, which was going over to her chapel to say a prayer. And filming this scene required George to wear waders. And I remember thinking, I had always thought that I would never have to make a film again that involved waders, because Not Yet Begun to Fight, which was also a Montana PBS project, was about wounded veterans fly fishing. And now here we were filming this flood sequence. And by the way, Johnny risked her life for that. Because we still talk about how we're so glad the fence held.
Yeah, we traversed about 40 feet of fence through the raging water.
Oh.
And we didn't even know if the fence would hold.
I've done that before.
You know.
It's sketchy. It is.
Yeah, I mean, you don't know if all the raging sketchy water tore away the cement block that held the fence or what. So,
all right, stand by. We haven't talked to you yet about, and it strikes me after this flood, Johnny, where you thought, oh, wow, I'm not going to recover from this. You were the gal who tripped up on the track, injured your back, and then recovered and got back. And you started riding bulls.
Yep.
So, yeah. Johnny Jankowski is with us, Cowgirl Hall of Fame, 1991, former bull riding champion, and it was women's bull riding champion. Was it 86 or
86 and 88?
86 yep. and 88. And there's a documentary now being told or being filmed to be released probably in the fall. Still some fundraising to do. I'll get on that. Two producers, co-producers for this show. Scott Sterling is with us here as well, director of productions for Montana PBS. And then co-producer and director of the show is Sabrina Lee. She's an independent filmmaker as well. For information, it's Johnny, J-O-N-N-I-E dash film and .org for more on that, too. We'll kind of get into that. I've teased this, and I've got to get to it, or I'll forget to talk about it. But early on, you're an athlete.
Right.
And you wanted to actually go to the Olympics.
Yeah, everything I wanted to do was to go to the Olympics. Actually, I went right to school here in Billings Central, and I was basically, I was fortunate. I mean, I put in the time, but I was a gifted athlete anyway, and I was a standout athlete my senior year. I had entered everything and nearly won everything in divisional, so I qualified in like 6 events for state. I had all these visions of going to UCLA, you know, Stanford, wherever, on a nice scholarship. And turns out that my coach wasn't aware, but I actually qualified for too many events. And at that time, you could there were so many field events, so many running events, throwing events, jumping events that you could be allowed to compete in. The bottom line is the other teams, the other schools waited. They knew that this was an infraction, but my coach did not. So they waited until I qualified in all of the things the day before. And then that Sunday of the finals, they basically said, look, John Kowski's qualified in too many events. And I got a phone call at 7 o'clock in the morning from my coach. Then later my mom came into the room and she said, honey, you're not running today. They disqualified you. And this is your senior year of everything. I mean, I was devastated. I can't even tell you what it was like. I mean, I had all these visions. My coaches were going to be there. My dad was a traveling salesman at the time. He was rarely ever there. He was going to be there. You know, a lot of people were going to be there. Heartbreaking to say the least.
You're a teenager at the time, too.
Teenager. So, yeah. 17 years old, and you just think, this is all it is. I'm going to be a career athlete. I had pentathlon, I high jump, long jump, shot put, javelin, 100 meters were the events. And obviously, I didn't get scholarships because I wasn't running. Everything kind of fell through, and literally, I went to Eastern for a year and whatever, and then I finally came back and said, Mom, I got to go run. I got to satisfy this. It's just burning in me. I can't just throw this away. And Flathead Valley, Kalispell offered me a scholarship and said, you know, we'll put you back on the team if you want to come. You know, we'd be happy to have you. So I ran for Flathead Valley, which was incredible. I mean, they held their own up against
UCF. At that time, you bet.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, we could never win a meet because we didn't have the depth, but we could win, you know, individual events.
Yeah.
And so anyway, we had great coaches, great staff. They took the top 12 of us probably literally all over the country. And so I got to compete with everybody like I was before. And the bottom line is we qualified, went to Denton, Texas for the Nationals, hoping for to qualify for the Olympics in 76. And in a hurdle event, you know, I clipped a hurdle and about the third one out and catapulted me to the track, and the injury was substantial, really severe. And I still had enough points to qualify for the trials, but obviously I was physically unable to run, so they gave it to the third place girl. And I can't even tell you the burning in that deal either. After training again and reprogramming your brain, you know, to this is where I'm going to go. And during the healing process, really had no clue. I mean, honestly, you know, I really had no clue. Ultimately, I saw a poster with my mom having lunch. It advertised a rodeo, and I'm thinking, oh, well, the Greenos used to do this. That was deep-seated in the back of my brain from 14. How hard can this be? Other people do this. I mean, I grabbed the poster, sat in front of my mom, and I said, and it was in 2 weeks. I had never seen a rodeo at that point.
And this is after, like, a couple of years recovery,
It was about 16 or 17 months.
Okay.
And, you know, and I'm starting to run and jump and do things again, and a little bit of, you know, bodybuilding, a little bit of, you know, triathlon stuff, anything to get competitive, but nothing was satisfying me. And I thought, well, what the heck? I'll just try this for a weekend. Literally went to the 17 bar, talked to Cowboy into loaning me his stuff. And literally, you know, he was a truck driver. I don't know if he ever used it either. And it was a Red Lodge. It was my first one. And it was a horse then.
Was that your first bull?
First horse.
First horse, okay.
And I got my picture taken riding one, and I actually held on to him. And I borrowed purple shats with green clovers, and I had a cowboy hat stuffed full of paper. I didn't even own a cowboy hat at the time. And, you know, but I really enjoyed the attention. A lot of people came down and goes, oh, my God, you're one of them rough stock riders down there, whatever. Well, I still just – it wasn't in my brain yet. It wasn't seated. I went home. Probably 2-3 weeks later, I got some calls from the gals that were there and said, you know, you should try riding bulls. I think you'd do better. I actually, in hindsight, I think they just were going to have some more entry fees in the pot to make more money.
And right.
We got a sucker here, yeah, boys, you yeah. know, for a little while. And
yeah, I got a newbie over here. Let's see what he – yeah.
Exactly. And then my first bull was actually out here. If anybody who's from Billings remembers the old hayloft, and Dale Small had it, and Lloyd Ketchum, and they ran the little rodeo out there at the bar, and got on a bull. His name was Man Mountain, and he literally was the biggest bull in the pen. Again, I borrowed a rope from another cowboy in a bar and spurs, and he turned out to be the brother of a girlfriend of mine. And I mean, I got on this bull, pulled the rope, whatever. I mean, I am so naive. I'm not kidding you. I did not even know to nod my head. That I just was thinking the gate was going to fly open at any moment, and I better be ready. That's how naive I was. Well, the first one lasted 4 seconds, and that one turned my crank. Honest to heaven, it was a whole different deal from the Bronx. And then I started going down the road with the girls and following the GRA circuit and getting to know that habit a little bit. And literally only just to kill time then till I figured out what I was going to do with the rest of my life. I'm 22 years old now, so I mean, I thought my world was over and I didn't have a clue where I was going to go. And obviously then it just, the girls were riding all two hands then. I started one-handed. That's the only way the guys would let me go. They started coaching me and getting me going. And I went down the road one-handed. They were going too. And obviously they couldn't coach me anymore. So then I started riding with the guys and the guys were coaching me more. And so it kind of transitioned to half riding with the guys, half riding with the girls. Obviously wasn't making a lot of money riding against the guys and or the girls weren't making any money either. But the girls was a circuit where you could win world titles. The guys was just a circuit where we could go and practice and ride. So, went down the road like that. And, you know, I thought I'd win my first world title and, you know, a year.
Right.
It took 10. Hello. But I didn't factor in, you know, I might break 13 ribs along the way or an ankle or a leg or a wrist or whatever. But then finally I found a school that took me. So that got me better.
Did you now, Johnny Jankowski again. And there's a story and it's kind of told in this Sports Illustrated story as well about getting into the school.
Yeah.
And then that winning ride, you actually won the school competition. But that bull made you pay for it.
Oh, yeah. That was, you know, it was really hard to get into a school. Back then, you used to get all the Horse and Rider magazines and the Western Horsemen. In the back, there was classifieds. And during November, that's when all of the guys take the break before the December, you know, world finals. So most of the world championships are out. Guys are trying to make money putting on schools. And I probably made, I don't know, 10, 15 phone calls to schools and entered for, you know, Johnny Jankowski, me, and they go, is it for you? And I would go, well, yeah. And, well, we don't take girls. We won't take girls. And everybody said we won't take girls. Finally, I just plain entered for Johnny, thinking it was probably my boyfriend or whatever. And they said, sure, you know, when can Johnny be here? And this is the school, and this is the rules, and this is whatever. And so I showed up. It was in Fountain, Colorado, and it was Bobby Berger at the time, Chris Ledoux, Bruce Ford, all those great guys.
Yeah.
And it was 105 guys and me. And I remember lining up along the fence line. All of us had our gear and our bull ropes out, and they walked along the line. Of course, there's my long blonde hair and under the hat. And it was like, wow. Well, the school was just short of 3 weeks long, and the attrition rate was pretty high. A lot of the guys weren't in great shape. And we'd get on, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 bulls a day, and then you'd get critiqued and videoed and whatever. It dwindled down, and the final day of the school, they took the top 10, and the top 10 rode off for the school buckle. And I had been watching this particular bull. His name was Spotted Dog. He was ginormous. He barely fit in the chutes. He was so huge, so tall. He must have been 6.5 feet tall at the withers. And long horns. He couldn't even keep his head straight in there. The horns were so long. He literally looked like the old movie Yaks pulling the carts. He was just awkward, and every way he bucked was awkward. There was no rhythm. Nobody had ridden him in the school in, I don't know, that almost at 3 weeks. Wow. I watched him go out 12, 15 times. Nobody even lasted 3-4 seconds on him. Just such long-bodied, long lunges. And I thought, I can ride anything in this pen, but maybe that one. And that's who I drew, of course. And you know, Bobby Berger and Chris Ledoux, they came right up and said, Johnny, you're the only one that can ride this guy. And I was, and that obviously instilled a little confidence in me. And I did. We nodded my head and rode the bull out. And, man, I heard that horn and that elation. I was so excited and went to pull the tail of my rope. And right then, you know, Spotted Dog stumbled. He hooked a horn, flipped himself. And we were both down. And I looked up, and he was getting up. And I saw that hoof come at my face. And I went, wow, he's going to kick me. And my head snapped back so hard it almost knocked me over. And then it pulled away, and I literally felt nothing, and I thought he missed me. Well, he didn't, next thing I know is, you know, Chris Ledoux goes, geez, her nose is torn off. Not exactly what you want to hear in your lifetime. So,
and then he said, but you won.
Yeah, but he said that was the greatest ride he had ever seen. And he said, you know, you took the school hands down, and all of the instructors said the same thing. But obviously, I didn't take home the school buckle. They didn't think that was going to be good to have an accredited school be won by a gal. So
we got to catch up here as much as we can. Johnny Jankowski in studio, Montana Pro Rodeo Hall of Fame, 1991 National Cowgirl Museum and Hall of Famer as well, and a former bull riding champion. Sabrina Lee is with us. She's the director and co-producer of Johnny, the documentary that's set to come out shortly. And Scott Sterling is with Montana PBS, director of productions, and also co-producer on this one. Hey, Scott, as much as we could just sit here and listen to Johnny tell stories, which is a big thing of what you guys have done here, too. Talk about telling the story of Johnny and fill us in on some of these details we might be missing.
Yeah, I mean, it's such an incredible. Johnny herself is an incredible storyteller, which makes our job really, really fun. You know, Sabrina, Johnny was mentioning, you know, some of these rides and stuff that we may not have footage of. One of the things we're going to do is hire an animator to kind of sketch and animate some of these stories that we don't have footage of. We have a lot of amazing archive footage that Johnny was able to provide for us that really, you know, helps tell that story. Our biggest thing right now is we need to fundraise to be able to, you know, pay licensing fees for this archive footage, pay this animator. You know, films like this are entirely funded by donations. You know, we don't rely on tax dollars or station operation funding, anything like that. So we're in the midst of a Kickstarter campaign right now to try to get across the finish line so we can get this film finished. You can check out the trailer at that website you mentioned, johnny-film.org, to really kind of get people excited about that. So
super. Sabrina, any final comments? Sabrina?
No, I just echo everything that Scott is saying, that this film has, you know, working with Johnny has been just such a fantastic experience. I'm really excited to bring this story to Montana PBS audiences. And I would love for people to go visit the Kickstarter page, because there's also other information, background information about the film. You can learn about the rest of the cast and crew. And that's at johnny-film.org, and Johnny is JONNIE, in case that wasn't clear. But yeah, we're super excited about this. This is about as much fun as you can have making a film, I think.
I bet
thank
it
you,
is.
Johnny,
yeah,
for that.
It's been good.
Johnny, thank you. Let me get this out as well one more time. AngelHorsesMT.org as well.
Yep.
Johnny, I look forward to chatting with you again.
Love it. That'd be great.
All right. Thanks again for joining us for the podcast. Please share and subscribe and let us know what you think. Email me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. And don't forget, we're on weekdays on your hometown radio stations all across Montana. We hope to hear from you there too.